Filmmaker Errol Morris likes to think of himself as a director-detective. That's because in his new film, The Thin Blue Line, he uncovers evidence he believes could save a man's life. The Thin Blue Line is about the 1976 murder of a Dallas policeman and the man charged with the murder. Morris tells the story through a series of interviews, heightened by dramatic techniques borrowed from fiction film. Philip Glass wrote the score for the film. Film critic Jay Hoberman said that Morris's films bear about as much resemblance to an ordinary documentary as a Dolly watch does to a Timex. Errol Morris is attracted to the offbeat in American life. His 1979 film, Gates of Heaven, was about California pet cemeteries. And his 1981 film, Vernon, Florida, featured monologues with eccentric residents of a small Florida town. Morris sees his new film as a real-life episode of The Twilight Zone, where, because of a chance encounter, an innocent man finds himself accused of a murder.
I, of course, told them what happened that Saturday, that I had met this kid. I kept telling them the same thing, the same thing, the same thing. They didn't want to believe me. Never once was I allowed a phone call. Never once was an attorney there. I don't know how long this had been. I know I had smoked 2 packs of cigarettes and had been out for a long time.
There are 2 primary characters in your movie. One is a man serving a life sentence for murder who you believe is innocent. Just tell us a little bit about him.
Randall Adams is a person, I believe, caught in a web of circumstance. He was picked up hitchhiking by a 16-year-old kid one Saturday morning, and as a result, found himself accused of a murder which he did not commit, the murder of a Dallas police officer in 1976. He came within a couple of days of being given a lethal injection in the state of Texas, and still is serving a life term for that crime. In the course of investigating the story, I came to believe that Randall Adams was innocent, that he had been telling me the truth from the very beginning, and that David Harris, the 16-year-old kid who was the chief prosecution witness at his trial, had committed the murder.
Your movie ends, and do you mind if I tell a little bit about how it ends?
Not at all.
Okay. Your movie ends with an interview with David Harris, the guy who I think you think really committed the crime, the guy who was not serving time for that crime. It ends with an interview with him, and you ask him in that interview if he thinks that Adams is innocent, and he says, I'm sure he is, and you say, how can you be sure? And he says, because I'm the one that knows. Well, that's pretty close to a confession. It's not a confession, but it certainly makes you think he was there, and he knows.
I asked him,
what does this count for in the courts?
I also asked him, is Randall Adams an innocent man?
Yeah.
He said, I'm sure he is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So is this enough to reopen the case?
You would think it would be. I've uncovered so much evidence in the course. You have to remember that in the course of making The Thin Blue Line, although 20 people appear in the film, I interviewed over 200 people. There is an enormous amount of evidence that I've uncovered. All of that evidence points to Randall Adams' innocence and to David Harris' guilt. The question you're asking is, what are people doing about this? What's happening in Texas? What's happening in the courts? The answer is nothing. I am terribly distressed by the failure of the Texas judicial system to deal with this case.
Do you want us to be watching this movie evaluating who's telling the truth the whole time?
Absolutely. This is not a movie designed to tell you what to think. This is a movie designed to set you adrift in a sea of conflicting facts, to put you inside the nightmare, inside the dream.
Do you think of The Thin Blue Line as a documentary?
Yes and no. I think of it as a documentary in the sense that the real people who are involved in this case appear in the film. The killer, the fall guy, the Dallas police, lawyers. surprise, mystery eyewitnesses, so on and so forth. In another sense, it differs from almost every documentary that I know of, both in style and in substance. It breaks with most of the conventions of documentary and of nonfiction filmmaking. And that's one of the reasons why I've called it a nonfiction feature, as opposed to a documentary.
Some of the ways that it breaks with the form of documentaries. When we're hearing an interview and seeing an interview with someone, you will insert footage of a kind of iconographic film noirish type imagery. If someone is talking about a police officer speaking under hypnosis, you see one of those watches going back and forth on the screen. We see the crime enacted in silhouette from several points of view. In talking about the police, you see the rotating gumball on top of the police car. And these images are repeated as the movie goes on. And I'd really like to know why you wanted to do that. Now, a kind of classic documentary filmmaker, a cinema verite filmmaker, would say that is, forging it in some way, that it's putting in irrelevant information because it's not the real thing. Why did you want to bring that in?
Well, there is no real thing in filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that disturbs me about cinema verite is the idea that it has some claim to truth. Truth, properly conceived, is never guaranteed by style. Cinema verite is one style among many. The style of The Thin Blue Line is one style among many. Truth, as such, is a quest. I, to this day, can't tell you what really happened on the roadway that night. I wasn't there. All I can do is provide an account of what happened that, in my own mind, squares best with the evidence that I have at hand.
When you're interviewing someone on camera, the camera basically doesn't budge. It doesn't zoom in on their hands if they're doing an interesting gesture. It just basically stays put. And the shots are basically the same for all the characters in the movie. And I wonder why you do that. You know, why that one basic shot?
Well, it goes beyond that even.
Uh-huh.
I filmed everybody using the same chair.
Oh, no. I didn't notice that.
Wherever I went, I took my chair with me. In fact, I would say without the chair, there is no movie. So the chair became a very essential part of my movie making. Everybody sits the same distance from the camera. In the same chair, we use the same lens. I've often been disturbed by the idea of the camera chasing after things. The twitch of a leg, hands rubbing together. The camera in The Thin Blue Line is almost like a bear staring down its subjects. It's there for people to talk to, unmoving, unflinching, undemonstrative in its own way. And as such, I think it takes on an incredible power.
Mm-hmm. You started off making a movie, and now you kind of have someone's life on your hands. And here's what I mean by it. You started off, to make a movie. And now you're convinced that someone who is serving a life sentence is actually innocent, and that someone else who you interviewed is actually guilty. You're perhaps more convinced than anybody is, and you've got a lot of information that you've gathered in your movie. The movie's done. Now what happens with your relationship to the case?
Knowing what I know, it would be irresponsible for me to do anything less than to seek Randall Adams's release and to see him eventually exonerated for this crime.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Sure.
Errol Morris, director of the new film, The Thin Blue Line.